still talk to all my instructors now, and they have nothing but good to say about me, and it kills me because they're like, you're going to do great things for the Navy. You're going to be successful. You're going to have a successful 20-year career. But at the end of the day, if somebody ever says, I'm a transgender service member, it's still not enough.
And you'd be discharged.
Without question.
How you doing? It is the Rebecca Giroux Show, and thank you for tuning in. Thanks for sticking around, and well, what you just heard, of course, that rather clumsy intro by my part, that was Landon Wilson from a clip from Transmilitary. We're going to be talking to Landon a little bit later. We also got Fiona Dawson, who is the host and producer of Transmilitary. We got both of them a little bit later in the show. Landon's story, really quite interesting, and an interesting twist on this. We'll get into that all a little bit later in the show. Very excited to have them on and have Fiona on again. We had her on a few months ago, and we're going to find out how much, what's going on with Transmilitary. And that's very exciting. So, let me talk. I got a... Wow, you know, have you ever had one of those weeks where it's just like, it seems like everything is happening at once? Like, all of a sudden, you've got all these irons in the fire, and all of a sudden, they all decide to just, something decides to happen on every single one of them at the same time. That's the kind of week I've been having. I mean, it's, part of it is self-inflicted, I will grant you. Well, for one thing, I decided to quit smoking this week because, well, you hear what I'm talking here? I've been working with a voice program, and I'm trying to keep my voice a little bit up here, you know, not quite so, you know, truck driver-y like I usually sound. You know what I mean. So you're going to hear me talking like this, and I'm trying to get good at it. And one of the reasons why I've been having a problem is because of the smoking. So we're getting rid of that. I've decided, fuck it, you know? I've been smoking since I was a kid. I smoked from the age of 13 years old, okay? And now I've had it. It's getting in the way. I got to get rid of it. In any case, okay, so that's one thing that's going on. Another thing is I want to talk a little bit. First, this is really kind of important. And those of you who follow me on Facebook, you probably already know about this, but I'm going to talk a little bit about this because those of you who follow the podcast, you may not be aware. Last week on the show, while we were recording the show, my producer, Mr. Mike Scott, who folks, you know, been with me on this show for about 8.5 years, really. And frankly, was responsible for so much of what you have heard on this show in terms of audio, in terms of music, in terms of what we call bumpers, you know, those little things that you hear in and out when we talk, all that stuff. That was all Mr. Mike. Well, Mr. Mike had what's called a TIA, a minor stroke, while we were on the air last week, and it was, we decided, because, of course, Mr. Mike's health is the primary concern, he felt he had to leave the show. And so he has, and unfortunately, Mr. Mike is no longer producing the show. He is, of course, that cute little devil that he is in the background, gave me a couple of, helping me out a little bit as he can. But he's taking it easy now, and you know, we want him to take it easy because we want to make sure he's around for a long time to come. So there's no more Mr. Mike. We're broadcasting on a new platform called Blog Talk Radio. Now, the great thing about Blog Talk Radio is I can sit here, I can talk to you, I can do this, I can run this whole thing myself. That's the good part. The not-so-great part is that, well, a lot of that music that you've heard, we're not going to be able to play as much of it. What I'm going to have to do is, because of the way that the royalty systems are set up, I will have to only stick to music, which we have, Mr. Mike and I, over the years, in fact, well, really, Mr. Mike, really, over the years, secured permissions from various artists, mostly trans artists who we've played over the years, and then we can stick to those artists. So it means I won't be able to play things that you've heard on this show, stuff like, Laura Jane Grace. Well, unless Laura Jane Grace gives me permission, I haven't yet been able to contact her. Hey, Laura, if you're listening, we'd really like to have you on the show. We're trying, but your management team doesn't seem to answer their emails. But in any case, unless we get express permission now, unless I get express permission, there's stuff we're not going to be able to play. Now, we do have permissions from a lot of artists. Mr. Mike has promised me he's going to be sending me some of that music. The stuff you heard, the theme, that's ours. Well, it's not ours. It was created by an artist, and he has given us permission to use it. So I can use that. But there are going to be differences. And it will change. For example, we are now connected by Skype. I can't take phone calls on Skype anymore. I can't tell you to connect on Skype because the Skype system is now used to connect me to Blog Talk Radio. And unlike in the case when Mr. Mike was doing it, he could bring somebody into the stream manually. Blog Talk Radio doesn't let me do that. So unfortunately, we've lost that ability. Not a big deal, but just, you know, now we have to take the calls by phone, or I have to make them myself. So, but we do have another nice little feature, is we have a chat room. Yes, we do. We have a chat room, and you can find it. blogtalkradio.com/rjuroshow. Go there. You'll be able to find the chat room. Come and join me in chat. Now, I'm in there, but, well, you know, I'm focusing on other things, so I'm not going to be having a lot of conversation with you in there, but I will be keeping an eye on it. If you say something interesting, contribute to the conversation, I might just quote you on the air. So check that out. Very excited. So I'm hoping this new platform is going to work out. I'm hoping it's going to do well. I also ask you to forgive me. I will sound a little bit scratchy tonight. I try to quit smoking, and I'm in that zone where you kind of get a little scratchy voice, you know? So I'm sitting here with two glasses of water right at my side for those moments when I'm going to need it. I'm very excited. I mean, I'm sad because Mr. Mike is no longer here, but I'm also very excited because we're starting a new phase of the show. As part of that, I have a new announcement. We're going to start a new segment next week on the show. We are going to have a trans/LGB news roundup where we're going to get into, and I said we, yes, I said we, are going to get into whatever the hot stories are that week. And I am bringing somebody into the show. You guys might know who I'm talking about. Parker Malloy is going to be joining us on a regular basis on the show. She's going to come on. We're going to talk news. We're going to talk whatever is hot that week. And that'll be great because most of you know who Parker is. She's the trans correspondent for The Advocate. Most of you know her work. She's also target of certain individuals who shall remain, well, I shouldn't say nameless since I've been talking about them for a month, but you guys know who I'm talking about. Anyway, so Parker will be joining us on the show starting next week for a trans LGB news roundup. I'm very excited about that. And, well, there's another thing. I got a job. Yeah. A job, a real one. It pays with money and everything, yes. Okay, here's the deal. Now, actually, I wasn't so sure I was able to talk about this, but I actually talked to somebody who's in charge and asked them if I could talk about this on the show. They said, sure, go ahead. So I'm going to. Let me just take a sip off my Wawa first. Okay, so here's the deal. There's this site, and I'm not sure if it's live yet. You might be able to check it out. It's called actsofgreatness.org. Now, what actsofgreatness.org is it's really a site that's set up to empower and support LGBT teens, sexually and gender diverse teenagers. And that site, in addition to all the other features and news and things that it's going to have, it's going to have a blog. That's right, with bloggers and everything. And I'm going to be the editor-in-chief of that blog. I am going to, my job is going to be helping teenage LGBT kids of various sexualities and genders and whatever. My job is going to be to help those kids tell their stories, to put them up and help them, you know, get it out there for all to read and maybe get some conversation going and get some, you know, be able to reach out and connect and all that good stuff. So, yeah. Yeah, you heard me. Okay? I said Rebecca Juro in the same sentence as editor-in-chief. I like that. So not only do I get to be editor-in-chief of a blog, which is kind of cool just in itself, but I get to help LGBT kids doing it, too. So, I mean, what more could I ask? Okay, now this is a part-time job right now. I have to say, this is brand new. The site hasn't even gone live yet. We have to see how what kind of reaction we get. If it's successful, though, this may turn into a full-time job. But first, we have to see how it goes, how well it's received. This is sponsored by the Calgary School District. In other words, Alberta, Canada. So we also have to see what our funding looks like. But, yeah, it's very exciting. And it's my first job, my first paid job as a member of an editorial staff of anything. You know, I've done some writing work where I've been paid for, but this is the first time I'm actually being paid as an editor, which is kind of cool. I like that. I mean, you know, it's great. I get a chance to make a few bucks. I get a chance to be editor-in-chief of a new blog, and I get to help kids. What seems like a win-win-win to me. So yeah, I'm really into this. I'm really hopeful this is going to turn out well. And, yeah. Oh, and now, I told you last week. I don't know. We didn't really talk about it much, but I'll talk about it a little bit. We got a few minutes. So, all right. Let me hit you with this. I went back on hormones a couple of weeks ago. I think I've kind of made allusions to this on the show before, but I used to be back in the day when I first started, 1997, when I was first coming out, I was on hormones. I was on the whole thing. I was working full time, still living as a guy, of course, working full time and making decent money. And so I could afford all that stuff. It wasn't a problem. And then, well, I lost my job. Came out, and that was it. Poof, gone, goodbye, instantly. The first job, the job where I was making good money, they phased me out. They decided they didn't need me anymore. And it wasn't that they fired me because I was a bad employee. They fired me because they decided they didn't want to pay my salary anymore. So it wasn't really an antagonistic thing. They said, oh, we'll give you a great reference. We just don't really have your salary in our budget anymore. So it's too bad. So that was that. And then I had another job, which I took later. Once I came out there, I was instantly fired and tried to go to New Jersey to, to complain and say, hey, you know, can't they do this? This has got to be illegal, right? And the state of New Jersey said, no, not really. We're perfectly fine with it. Have a nice day. So that was, you know, back in 1997, I was able to afford these things. And then all of a sudden, I was out of a job, which meant eventually I was out of money. Couldn't afford it. So what do you do? Are you going to not feed yourself, or are you going to, you know, what's going to go first, the food or the hormones? Well, you know which one has to go. So I wound up going off hormones, and I was off hormones for several years because I had no choice. Well, guess what? I have a choice now. Things have changed. I'm not wealthy by any stretch of the imagination, but I can afford hormones now. I can afford to buy myself some nicer clothes, which, I don't know, if those of you who have looked at my profile on Facebook, you see pictures of me at the convening and stuff, see a lot of pictures of me in T-shirts and stuff. Yeah, well, because when you make zero money, it's T-shirts are what I can afford, really. I mean, honestly, I mean, it wasn't about, you know, and so now I have a little bit more money. I mean, not a lot, but enough that I decided, and I know, and I don't want this to all be about me, but I've just got a few minutes to fill, so I'm telling you, it's like I've become, the hormones have really, they change your, and those of you, you know, those of you who are on hormones or have taken hormones or have experienced this, you know, that it changes your personality in subtle ways. I mean, you're still yourself. But there's certain aspects to your personality. I think guys, trans guys, become a little more aggressive, a little more, I've seen a few of them become slightly more prone to anger. I mean, not insanely, but yeah, there are tendencies. There are, you know, whereas I and other trans women, I think it's the other way around. I cry much easier. I find myself crying for no reason, like not sobbing or anything, just like, you know, sniffly kind of thing. And there's no reason. There's no reason. I'm not watching a sad movie or anything. I just. So there's certain things. Oh, my goodness. Forgive me. That's gonna happen tonight because, again, quitting smoking, it's a bad thing. We're gonna make it through though. So yeah, the hormones definitely fuck with my psychology in weird ways. And those of you who are on hormones, you understand this. With me, it's kind of weird because I've done this before, so I'm conscious of like what the change is, what to expect. And when you do it for the first time, you don't really know what to expect. So it's kind of like it happens, and then you like look back and say, "Wow, you know, did I really just turn into somebody else?" Pretty much. And see, with me, I kind of know to expect these things. Like because when I'm not on hormones, I hate shopping. You couldn't drag me to the supermarket. You know, I hate shopping. I just hate it. I never shop for clothes. I never shop. I just don't like shopping. 2 weeks on hormones, I bought about $400 worth of clothes. I've gone shopping like crazy because I've decided, you know, I wear a lot of jeans and T-shirts and jeans and T-shirts. It's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm sick of jeans and T-shirts. I want some skirts. I want some dresses. I want to, you know... And there's, well, I'm not ready to go public just yet, but suffice it to say that, yeah, I'm thinking about surgery. Not ready to announce anything just yet, but yeah, I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it a lot. Because now, well, let's put it this way. When you're in a place where you know that certain things are not possible because of money, you just don't go there. You just say, you know, this is not possible. Okay, so it's not possible. So But now, all of a sudden, it is possible. And so I find myself now, 17 years after coming out, after living for 17 years as an out pre-op trans woman, now all of a sudden, I'm like, it's like I'm going back to the beginning. And I'm saying, okay, this time, now I can do this the way I wanted to do it in the first place. And it's so interesting because it's like it's all the stuff, all the bad habits, the depression and the lack of drive that I developed while I was off hormones, it's all gone away. Now I'm like, I've gone crazy. You know, no, that's the wrong term because that carries connotations that aren't true. I've just, like, exploded with energy in doing all these things. I'm saying, I want it all. I want it right now. Do you know what I mean? It's like, now I can have it, so I want it. And I want it today. You know, and I realize intellectually I can't have it today because it's like, these things take time. And but it's like, I feel like I have to make up for lost time. Because now it's possible. Now I can do it. Do you know what I'm saying? So, anyway, and then in the midst of all of this, Mr. Mike, you know, which was, well, how else do I describe it? It was a blow. It was definitely a blow. And you know, it's for the best because Mr. Mike's health absolutely comes first. But yeah. When you've worked with somebody for 9 years, or almost 9 years, you grow to depend on them. And when all of a sudden that person is not there, and you're like, okay, Becky, you're on your own. Good luck. It's like, whoa. You know, I was not prepared for this. In terms of, I was totally taken by surprise. But you know what? I was prepared for this because Mr. Mike and others have made me ready for it, to do this without a net. And that's cool. And I, you know, what the heck. So we are about 2 minutes. We are going to take a quick break now. What I am going to do, I will warn you in advance, I have a quandary. I have a problem where with this, the music that we are allowed to play. Unfortunately, I don't have a large selection. In fact, I don't have anything right now. So when we take a break, and we will be taking a break in about 2 minutes, so that I can then get Landon and Fiona on the line. And then what we'll do is you may get a minute or two. I'm going to try and throw something in. Unfortunately, I don't have anything handy. So I'm just going to put in a bumper, and then you may get a few seconds of silence. So please don't go anywhere. I know. What I'm going to try to do is just replay the same bumper a few times while I get them on the air. Okay? So let's see here. Alrighty then. How do I do this? Okay. You know what? I am going to, right now, let's see what time is it. Okay. I think I understand how to do this. Okay. So now, you may hear a little bit of dead air. If you do, don't worry about it. I'm not going off the air. I'm just having problems. I'm just learning exactly how much I don't know yet about Blog Talk Radio. So you will, I hope, forgive me there. And Fiona is tweeting more stuff. Yes, because we're about to call you, Fiona. So just hang on there just a minute while I find your phone number. Where is that? Ah, there we go. Okay. Now, let's see. Okay. Do-do-do-do-do. And, there it is. Okay. So, all right. I am going to play this bumper here. And, we'll see what happens. Okay. Wish me luck. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona.
Hey, Becky, how are you?
Good. Okay, good. We didn't blow up the whole program trying to call you guys. Excellent. So we have you and we have Landon on the line as well?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
All right. Well, thank you both for coming on. Now, I wanted to let me introduce you both. Now, Landon, you are, of course, someone you enlisted in the United States Navy as a woman. At some point, you began serving as a man. I'm going to ask you to tell your story. And, of course, Fiona has been with us before. She is the host and producer of the Transmilitary Project. And we're going to be asking her for an update a little bit later. But, Landon, one of the things that I thought was so interesting about your story was that you did. You enlisted as a woman, but at some point you began serving as a man. How exactly – that sounds really unusual to me. How exactly did that happen?
Well, I enlisted in 2011, and I began hormone replacement therapy in November of 2012. So for about the first 8 months of my transition, nobody really asked any questions, and I still got gendered at work as female. And then I left that command, and I began training on the East Coast. And as soon as I arrived at that new location, everybody gendered me as male. I went through uniform issue with the guys. All the training I did was as a male. So it was really just the change of environment, I think, that really set the change there.
That's very interesting. And I guess what surprises me is that, you know, you would think that the United States military, like, keeps track of this stuff. I mean, was it easy for you to assimilate as male in the service?
No, I think a lot of that was just being finally taken at face value. I think mm-hmm. people began to just look past any hesitation that they had, and they saw me for the value of my work and the value of the person I was versus what paper may or may have not said at that point in my training experience.
Right. And of course, you know, it's also worth noting that you were a dominance warfare specialist stationed in Afghanistan. And, you know, you were a very high-tech, the Navy literally invested millions of dollars in your training. And yet, the moment that this came to light, you were immediately shipped home, weren't you?
I was. It was within hours. As soon as I was outed as being transgender, it was hours that I was put back on the rotator and headed back to the States.
And now, one thing I thought was very interesting that I read here was that most likely you can are certainly eligible to go right back as a private contractor making even more money doing pretty much exactly what you were doing for the United States Navy. And it makes you wonder, with all the budget fights that they have in Congress, how does this make economic sense for the United States military? Do you agree?
I certainly do, and I certainly don't have numbers about budget and anything like that, but I do know that the training that they invested in me has been a loss on the government's money, for sure. And it's a little bit bizarre when you think about the fact that the DOD is still deploying civilian contractors to do the same exact job, and they, too, happen to be transgender. So it's definitely a precedent to say that we're doing these jobs, we're capable of doing them, because we have been trained and we are good at these positions.
Okay. Now, one of the arguments that we hear a lot from the Pentagon, and they, I was reading an article recently where they literally just quote 30-year-old regulations or 40-year-old regulations. But it seems to me, it seems to me that you would have, I mean, do you feel, having been inside, having been a trans man inside, you've seen this, do you believe that if the change was made, if trans people were allowed to serve openly, do you believe it would cause the kind of disruption that the military is claiming it, they think it would?
No, not at all. I think the military, with the recent report that the Elders Report released in March, it's clear that it's put out that the military thinks that transgender individuals are asking for exceptional treatment, and we're not. We're not asking for any sort of special treatment or to be the exception. We're just asking to be seen as capable human beings, and that makes a significant difference there, in that we're not asking for military medical or the military to do anything different that they wouldn't do for our cisgender counterparts. We're just asking to be able to serve and to defend the country that we signed up to serve for.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, what do you think, how would you like to see the military handle this situation? And what do you think, as somebody who served, do you think that the military can do, and what do you think the military should do as far as the treatment of trans soldiers and sailors like yourself?
I think we need to look to the 13 other countries that have been capable of implementing the policy and allowing transgender people to serve. We're looking at countries that are our greatest allies, like Canada, Australia, Israel, United Kingdom, that have figured this out. We continue to be the odd man out here, and if these countries have figured it out and they've made it as low-key as possible, I think we have a precedent to follow here, and we need to follow in their footsteps. I definitely think that the key here is going to be educating our military leaders, and once we can look to our leaders in uniform to see them implement that change, that'll be where the acceptance happens.
I think you're so right, because we've heard so many similar stories post and pre Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where there seemed to be this big resistance, and yet once these soldiers and sailors were said, okay, the command has come from on high, this is what we'll do, they just did it, because that's what soldiers and sailors do, it seemed to me.
Right. It's definitely more of a basis that it's not being LGBT that hurts the military. It's the discrimination that you receive when you're LGBT and not fully allowed to be that hurts the military as an institution, and it hurts the people that are serving within the military.
Do you believe that your fellow soldiers and the command, I mean, in terms of their own feelings about transgender people, do you think that they're ready for that? Do you think that if they did change the policy, that once you and others were able to serve openly, were there, do you think that there would be a problem between fellow sailors and soldiers, or even discrimination among the command?
In my experience, and thankfully in my experience, after I came out on the Washington Post, I was contacted from people through my commands and all the trainings that I've gone through, and they were completely positive and accepting about my situation. In light of other people, again, I think it comes down to education. I think that once the policy is lifted, we're going to see a stronger military, because our people are going to be accepted, and it's going to make them stronger in and of themselves, and it's going to release a lot of tension and fear that these people have in doing their jobs. And once that barrier is lifted, it can only make you a stronger military, and you can't argue with that. Leaders want you to be good at your job, and if you can't be good because of a old policy, it makes sense to empower your service members.
Absolutely. I I totally agree with you. I mean, a strong military, I mean, that seems to be something that, that all of us can agree on, regardless of how we feel about war or anything else. I think we can all agree that a strong military is what's best for our country. And I'm curious. Now, having been through this, how has this changed you as a person, this experience?
When everything first came to light, I couldn't help but be a little bit angry just because of the policy. It wasn't at the military by any means, but at the policy, because I had leadership congratulating me on the job that I was doing, commending me on how good of a job I was doing, but at the same time, I was losing everything I worked for because of a policy that nobody could change. And then you start to look at the 15,000 transgender service members that are actively serving and come to realize that I'm not the only one. You know, we aren't alone in this, and if anything, it's given me the courage to be able to stand out and put myself out there for the thousands of other people that don't have this ability right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and then I'm going to go to Fiona, but you mentioned that you said that there are 15,000 transgender service members serving right now. This is new to me. This is a figure that's new to me. Where does that figure come from?
A study released by the Williams Institute estimates that there are roughly 15,500 active duty service members that are in the United States military today.
Wow. Wow. That is really a stunning figure. And I think we should make it a point to promote that a little bit more, because I'll be honest with you, that knocks me for a loop that there frankly are that many. I mean, on the one hand, you realize that the United States military is an enormous organization in terms of personnel, and yet we always think of ourselves as such a small community, relatively speaking, I think. So that number is very striking to me. Fiona, I wanted to ask you about last time you were on. I know that Transmilitary, there was a page for donations for Kickstarter. How is that effort going, and where are you in the production?
Yeah, thank you, Becky. So that fundraising was on Indiegogo, and we successfully raised $8,000 to keep us going. That was our goal, and we're incredibly grateful, and thank you, everybody, for your donations. And so what we're doing today is continuing to raise the larger amount to go into full production. So we're really looking and working with major foundations to be able to support the full production. And then since Landon coming out on the Washington Post, we saw an incredible outpouring of support for him personally and the stories. And as we keep referring to, that there are approximately 15,000 people who identify as transgender currently serving, we strongly feel that their stories need to be told. So we had people wanting to financially support as well, and so we have a GoFundMe campaign, and it's just GoFundMe/support trans military. And people can give a donation of any size, because right now it helps us get to the major dollars that we need to produce the series, which we do hope that we will achieve by the end of the summer, to be able to release content as soon as we can.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, actually, that was going to be my next question, was do you have any sort of estimation as to when this project may be completed?
Well, unfortunately, Becky, it all comes down to the funding. my hope have something released this fall, and we are a very determined team because, you know, we are keeping momentum going. We're seeing so many more positive stories of transgender people in the media, and Transmilitary is really maintaining a part of that narrative. And of course, you know, not only with Landon coming out, but with other service members coming out, it's very important for us to keep these voices high up there. So we're hoping that we can have some content coming out in the fall of the series, and then also producing a full-length documentary.
Wow, that is awesome. Oh, keep going. What'd you say?
I was going to say that in the meantime, the best thing that people can do to support is actually engage with us on social media. You know, our Facebook page is easy to find. Again, it's just Support Transmilitary. Our Twitter handle is @Transmilitary. And the more followers, the more likes that we have, the larger audience we can build so that when we are, so we can strongly demonstrate to potential funders and distributors that this is content that people want to see.
That's really awesome. It's so great. And the great thing about this, is, at least for me, is it's not only about the topic, which is so great, but you're getting such a great selection of soldiers and sailors to participate in this. And I think it's really incredible because these stories are so compelling.
Well, thank you, Becky. I mean, we're really delighted to be able to do this because it's the first project of its kind to give an exclusive platform to transgender people who right now have no voice. Like every single day, they are protecting and serving the United States. And as you said earlier, regardless of how you feel about the military or feel about war, I think that we can all come together on the fact that all human beings deserve equal rights, respect, and responsibility. And this platform is an avenue for transgender people to be able to speak up and say, hey, you know, I deserve to be treated equal to my peers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Fiona, Landon, I want to thank you both for so much for coming on. This has been terrific. Again, I hope everybody will support this effort because this is a great effort, and I really am looking forward to seeing this when it's completed. Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you, Becky, for your support. Thank you.
You bet. Have a good night. All right. So that was Landon Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, Becky.
What?
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
I meant to say that at the beginning. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Okay. I'll see you guys later. Okay. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, and that was Landon Wilson, Fiona Dawson of Transmilitary. Yes, it is, in fact, my birthday. What do you know? If you guys want to call in, the phone lines are now open, 646-564-9501. You can also join us in the chat room, which you can find, blogtalkradio.com/rjuroshow. We are there. Find us. So let's see. What else have we got to talk about tonight? Now, you know, I'm a little at loose ends because, of course, you know, I'm doing this again for the first time without Mr. Mike. It's a little difficult. You know, it's kind of like you're so used to having things to happen a certain way and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, well, they're not going to be that way anymore. And you're going to have to figure out how to adjust. So sometimes I adjust well, and, well, sometimes, well, maybe not so much. But, another thing I wanted to talk about tonight, and unfortunately, I was hoping to have some clips. Unfortunately, I was not able to get those clips pulled, but I will say that we were, as you know, we've been talking about the whole RuPaul situation, and then we were talking about the Drag Race 76 video from Alaska Thunderfuck. As you know, may have been an issue. Frankly, most of us felt it was extremely transphobic. It directed violence, anti-transgender violence, over towards a figure on this video that was, many people felt, including myself, frankly, that it was supposed to be Parker Malloy in a blue wig with a mustache. It was very, I felt it was very transphobic at the beginning. And a lot of people were very upset about it. We've talked about it on the show. In a lot of cases, you know, I mean, I don't necessarily tend to blame the person who made it. I blame the editor who posted it on the front page of Gay Voices, James Nichols. That's who I put at least part of the blame. But, of course, ultimately, it has to go to the guy at the top, Noah Michelson. So, you know, I mean, this kind of thing couldn't happen without his okay. So, I think I have to assign or at least, you know, there has to be shared blame there. But nevertheless, there was an interesting development this week because Parker was on the Feast of Fun podcast, and she was discussing the situation, and they got a call from Alaska Thunderfuck while they were doing the show. And I thought it was quite interesting. Alaska apparently said that he did not realize that it was going to be as transphobic as it was, apologized very well and profusely to Parker, as certainly impressed me. Parker accepted the apology. I think there's no harm, no foul there now. I mean, it seemed I was very impressed with the whole situation. I think there was at least based on what I picked up from listening to this pod. And by the way, I would encourage you, if you have not heard this and you're interested, head over to Feast of Fun. I think it's feastoffun.com, I believe it is. And I believe it's the top. It's the top one, right on their page. Let me see here. I'm gonna look it up right now while I'm talking to you. Let's see here. Whoops! It helps if I spell feast correctly. Yeah, there it is. Okay. So yeah, just look up feastoffun.com. Parker is right up there, and it's a good interview. A good interview, and again, I thought it was quite interesting. I thought it was quite interesting that Alaska Thunderfuck came on, really apologized. Apparently, this was not an attack situation; it was an ignorance situation, and that's unfortunate because here's the thing: I can forgive someone like Alaska Thunderfuck for making a video and saying, oh, haha, I think this is going to be hysterical, it's so funny, and then not realizing. But you know who I can't forgive? I can't forgive the editorial staff at the Huffington Post, because they are the people who are supposed to know better. They are the people who are supposed to say, gee, maybe a large share of our readership is going to be truly offended by this. And if that editorial staff does not have the necessary perspective or concern for the trans community, then there's something fundamentally wrong there. And I thought Alaska Thunderfuck's apology to Parker was terrific. I certainly get kudos from me. But, you know, again, I tend to place the blame here more with Noah Michelson and James Nichols, because they are the people who are supposed to stand between hateful and, you know, again, not saying that this was made with hate, but just because you don't intend something to be bigoted and hateful doesn't mean that it isn't. Do you see what I'm saying? Hate and bigotry are in the eye of the beholder, not in the eye of the offender. You don't get to say, I'm not saying this to be offensive. We get to say whether we are offended or not. And that is true regardless of what direction we're having this conversation in. Two gay guys can call each other faggot all day long. And if they're not offended, well, who cares? But if you say the same thing to a third guy and he is offended, well, who's really at fault there? Why should you get to determine what the third guy finds offensive? Same thing here. I mean, you know, this goes back to the whole RuPaul thing. Even a couple of years ago, when he was on Michelangelo Signorelli on Sirius, at the time he was on Sirius AdQ, now he's on Sirius Progressive. But at the time he was on, and he basically said something to the effect of, well, you know, it's ridiculous and nobody should be offended, and I wish Lance Bass had called him fuck you tranny jerk. And I mean, it was like really ridiculous, okay? And And that's the thing. It was more like this issue, and the reason I think why trans women have just finally had enough of this jack-off is that finally people said, you know what? Fuck you, RuPaul. You don't get to decide who gets offended. We don't care how much money you have. We don't care how many viewers you have. And, you know, I mean, because you know, this is a drag shtick. You see in that Alaska Thunderfuck video, if you ain't paying my bills, you ain't got nothing to say to me. It's like, fuck you. Fuck you. That's what you want to make your life about? Money grubbing bullshit like that? I can be a complete asshole unless you're paying me money? That's going to be your life motto? Well, fine. Go fuck yourself. Don't expect me to sit around and wait for you to come around. Okay? If you're going to be a money grubbing asshole, somebody like me is going to call you a money-grubbing asshole. And as long as you want to strut around and say, if you ain't paying my bills, you ain't got nothing to say to me. Well, you know what? Then I'm going to call you a money-grubbing asshole because that's exactly what you are. You don't give a shit about the community. You don't give a shit about anything except your own wallet. And when you go around throwing shit like that around, I'm going to call you out on it. And you know what? So are other people. And you don't like it? Fuck you. Get out of the business. Ask me if I give a shit. I mean, sorry, I have no sympathy. You make millions of dollars every year. You don't like it? You're upset that people are not saying nice things about you? I couldn't care less. You don't like it? Don't be a celebrity. You don't like it? Don't keep giving me so much ammunition. That's what I say to people all the time when they complain. I call them out on this show. Or if they complain when I call them out on an op-ed or something. Well, you don't want to get called out on an op-ed? You don't want to get called out on this show? Stop giving me ammunition. Stop doing stupid shit. Stop doing transphobic nonsense like this. And then I won't have anything to call you out for. I mean, you know, the Human Rights Campaign got that message. I used to call them out all the time. Well, they stopped doing stupid shit. Well, mostly anyway. But that's the point. I call out people on this show who deserve to be called out. That's what I do. If you don't like it, well, then that's fine. But don't expect me to protect you. I'm going to call you out if you do something wrong. I'll also laud you if it's worthwhile. But don't expect me to do anything differently. If you want to avoid that kind of thing, well, then stop giving me ammunition. You know, and then there are certain people who, well, I'm not going to name. If you have been listening to my test shows, you may have heard me expand on this on one of them. But there are certain people who, you know, the way they deal with it is they say they don't like what you have to say, or you're upset because they feel you're too hard on their organization, and then they just pretend you don't exist. So, you know, like, for example, this whole Drag Race 76 video, certain people who I had believed in the past that the community could rely on clearly aren't as reliable as once thought. What it seems to be is that certain individuals at organizations that shall remain nameless, seem to have this really thin skin and refuse to deal with media, with people like me. Apparently, we're not all marching to their tune, so we're no good anymore. And they just apparently roll up the sidewalks over there. Either that or maybe they're just too busy planning another celebrity party. Oh, wait, yeah, like the one they just had last week. Yeah, like that one. I think it's kind of sad because they've done all this work to build up their credibility. And I'm just watching it go right down the toilet from crap like this with petty-ass political games from people like Rich Ferraro, which is really disappointing. because, you know, there are some really great people working for GLAAD. And it's just sad to see this kind of pettiness on the upper echelons of that organization. You know, kind of feeds into certain negative stereotypes that, you know, the organization has spent a lot of time and effort to try and dissuade people and prove that they're not true. And then they go do stuff like this, which just undoes all that hard work. And it's really kind of disappointing because, you know, you would think, well, you know, you would think that we've been through this, you know? I mean, you pull this crap, and then you wonder why so many people are so quick to distrust you. I mean, really. It's disappointing. It really is. It really is. But anyway, so let's see. Oh, look at that. Well, supposedly we're supposed to be going to a break. I don't know what I'm going to do. Let's see. I don't have any break music. I don't know what I'm going to do. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right. You know what? I hate to do this to you, gang, but you are going to have to deal. Okay, you know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to do? Okay. Rather than make you sit through, rather than make you sit through dead air, I am going to disappear from this microphone for a few minutes, but while I am gone, I am going to replay an interview that I did with Noah Michelson about the Drag Race 76 video. I just happened to have it transferred onto this system, so I'm going to play it. It is about 7 minutes long. I don't know if we'll play closer to 8 minutes long, but I don't know if we'll play the whole thing. I will be back because I need to step out of the room and go to the little girl's room. So I'll talk to you guys in a couple of minutes. All right. Hi, everybody. We are back. It is the Rebecca Giroux Show, and we are talking to the Huffington Post Gay Voices editor-in-chief, Noah Michelson. And we wanted to talk about, there was a video that many people consider transphobic. It depicted anti-transgender violence, a trans woman with a mustache who was obviously supposed to be Parker Malloy, who is, of course, the trans issues correspondent for The Advocate. And Noah, you are the guy who's in charge of the editorial staff that thought that this was appropriate to post on the Huffington Post Gay Voices. And what I'm wondering is, well, I'll just say it like this. What were you guys thinking?
Sure. First, I want to say thank you for having me, Becky. I've wanted to do your show for a while, so this is great. Secondly, over the last month, as you probably know, there's been a lot of discussion around RuPaul's Drag Race, specifically the use of certain terms on that show, and a lot of people have had a lot to say about that language, and it's sort of bled into a larger conversation between trans people, trans activists, drag queens, cisgender people, and there are a lot of different opinions about who gets to use what language and how that works. At Gay Voices, I would argue, have more trans content than any other website, LGBT or mainstream. It's a huge part of what we do. It's very important to us. But we're also very interested in having a lot of different voices talking about issues like language and power, identity, privilege. When I saw the video, I did not think that video, I didn't see it in that light. And that was actually misjudgment on my behalf, especially in this current climate. I saw it as a parody and a discussion about language policing. And that's how we approached it. I did not view that person in the video as Parker Malloy. But in retrospect now, I can see, number one, how much that video has hurt a lot of people. And number two, how sort of not helpful that video is to the discussion. So originally it was my intention that would be another viewpoint in the larger discussion that we've been having on the page with lots of people weighing in, including yourself and the great blog that you published a couple days ago. And I thought it was another voice. And I really realized after I talked to some people that I really respect in the trans community, out of the trans community, And they said, you know, this video isn't helpful, and it really goes too far. And I agree. So we took it down.
Okay. And now let me ask you something. I mean, I'll throw this in. I realize I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this question, but I am curious. There have been charges that, and these have not come from me personally, but there have been charges that say, well, the fact that the editorial staff of Gay Voices is all cisgender white guys, you know, people are saying, well, you know, this was bound to happen. Maybe they should get some diversity in there. Do you think that was a factor? That maybe if somebody who was a trans person was on the editorial staff, that maybe you wouldn't have been so fast to post it?
I don't know. I can't speak to that because that's just a hypothetical. I would like to say that our staff does not include just all white gay men. And that's part of the problem, I think, with this entire discussion is that there's a lot of the accusations made about what's going on, and it doesn't look at the reality of what we do on the website or who writes for the website. We have people of color who are on staff. We have queer women who are on staff. And so to just say it's just white cisgender men isn't the reality. Secondly,
okay, I am back. I'm not going to continue that. I will note that, you know, if you noticed when Noah Michelson listed who he has on staff, the word trans did not come up. just making that point. Anyway, we are back. It is the Rebecca Giro Show. Thank you for sticking around. I want to remind you that you can call in. The phone line is open right now, 646-564-9501. You can also join us in chat. You just blogtalkradio.com/rgiroshow. I believe there is a link for the chat room right on page, if I am correct. I apologize to you. I am still very much getting. Let's see. Okay. Let's see. I don't know. It says I am live. I don't know where it says. I don't know where it says to go. Let's see here. Maybe this is it. Okay. Oh, I see. If you click on the link, it will take you to the live feed, and then when you go to the live feed, you should be able to hear the. You should be able to get into the chat. Okay. I apologize. I'm still very new to this Blog Talk Radio thing, and so I apologize. I have been trying really, really hard to learn all the different things, but I mean, literally, I have had 1 week to learn this system. I'm barely up to speed on how to run the show, much less how to deal with all this other stuff. So I ask your indulgence. In any case, once again, 646-564-9501. Give us a call. Let's see what else we got to talk about tonight. I know I tracked down a couple of stories that I thought were interesting. Oh, here's one. You know, a friend of mine sent me this. A friend of mine who lives in Israel actually sent me this. There's this Eurovision apparently is going on right now. This is a big European entertainment festival that goes on every year. Very, very big deal in Europe. And apparently one of the competitors is a woman, well, I'll call her a woman, named Conchita Wurst. They refer to this person as she and her, so I'm assuming that those are her preferred pronouns. She is apparently I am not sure if she is a drag queen. I'm not sure. I really do not know. I don't see a actual definition. She IDs as transgender. It seems to be she and her are the pronouns used. But what makes Conchita Wurst interesting and not your standard drag performer is that Conchita Wurst has a full beard. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I have no issue with drag queens per se. I think they're cool. But, you know, and please, don't take this as anything other than just, I don't know. Bearded women creep me out. I'm sorry. They just do. I think it just, the whole thing creeps me out. I'm sorry. And again, I'm sure this is a nice person. I'm sure she's a wonderful performer. This is not anything against her personally. I'm sorry. Bearded women creep me out. I'm sorry. It just, I mean, I know it's a form of gender fucking and all that stuff. I'm sorry. I just, maybe I'm old fashioned. Maybe, I don't know, you know, maybe like, you know, people, like the kids, sick teenagers who grow up will not have a problem. I don't want to say I don't like it, because that implies dislike or that I have a problem with it on a personal, that's not it. I don't have a problem with it. I believe people should identify and present themselves any way they want. I'm saying on a personal level, on a strictly physical level, it creeps me out. Bearded women creep me out. Ooh, yuck! Yuck! I mean, how much time do, like, most of us spend trying to get rid of our fucking beards? And this one, it's just, I'm sorry, it creeps me out. It creeps me out. I can't help it. Again, not a dig against drag queens, not a dig against this woman. I just think bearded women, I mean, it makes me think of, you know, the freak show at the zoo. And again, I'm not trying to connect those two things, but on a personal level, on an emotional level, on a gut level, it just creeps me out. As a transsexual woman who has put myself through torturous hell trying to get rid of my own beard, I guess it fucks with my own sense of gender in a way so directly that my psyche just rebels from it. I don't know. And I'm trying very hard not to try and say, I have a problem with this woman, I have a problem with her. It just creeps me out. I'm sorry. It just does. I mean, I think if this woman is truly a woman and wants to be seen as a woman, well, women don't have beards where I come from. I'm sorry. I know, and I know it's gender fucking, and I know all that stuff. I'm sorry. I guess I'm too old school. It just creeps me out. I find it unattractive at best, and nausea making at worst. I'm sorry. Again, strictly emotional, strictly gut reaction, nothing to do with this person, nothing to do with her right to present her as she wishes. I just look at the picture, and it destroys. I mean, I always thought that drag queens were about creating the illusion. And again, I don't know if this person is a drag queen. The article that I'm reading, which is from Haaretz, which is an Israeli newspaper, does not really specify whether or not she is actually, they say she is a transgender performer. They don't say whether she is transsexual. They don't say whether she is a drag queen. I don't know. I'll read this article and you guys can judge for yourself what you think of this. Every year, Eurovision keeps hundreds of millions of viewers glued to their screens for a long night of catchy pop music and risque outfits. The last time Israel won this competition was in 1998 when transgender singer Dana International swept up the most points from European countries for the song Diva. Overnight, she became a European household name as well as an outspoken leader among the LGBT community. 16 years after, Austria is sending a performer that seems like the new version of Dana International with one significant difference. She doesn't use a razor. If a decade and a half sending a transgender performer to the relatively conservative competition seemed odd, Austrian singer Conchita Wurst is attempting to push Europeans' limits yet again. She will appear on stage in Copenhagen tonight to sing her emotional ballad, Rise Like a Phoenix, with long hair, black dress, and a thick black beard. And it turns out that the Israeli diva is a source of inspiration for Wurst. Oh, I love Dana, said Wurst to Haaretz. She is such a strong woman, and that is inspiring for sure. Conchita, who was born as Tom Neuwirth in 1988 in Gmunden, Austria, studied at the Graz School of Fashion and currently resides in Vienna. Now, this is kind of interesting, so it leads me more to the drag queen side of the equation here, even though, again, they don't specify. This is what it says the following. Tom and Conchita exist side by side. As Wurst says on her website, they are a team working in sync. Although they have never met before, they are constantly missing each other in the mirror. Conchita's biography, like herself, includes both real and fabricated details. She was born in the Colombian Mountains, grew up in Germany, and participated in an Austrian talent reality show called, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Die Grobe Chance, The Great Opportunity. The Guardian recently reported that St. Petersburg legislator Vitaly Milonov, the man behind Russia's now infamous law against homosexual propaganda, has written a letter to Russia's Eurovision Selection Committee asking it not to send Russian musicians to the competition. So that apparently is what's going on there. Like I said, I guess it's interesting. I can't help it. I think women with beards, I think that's creepy. I know. It's not progressive. It's just aesthetically. That was the word I was looking for before. Aesthetically, I find it creepy. I just do. I'm sorry. I don't know why. I really don't. And I have to say, I don't. Oh, my goodness. I don't know what's going on there. But in any case, we're having a... Boy, I hope everything is okay with the stream, because I'm having a little problem with my browser here. So... trying to think of what I want to talk about because I can't change my page right now. Let's see. Actually, I know where I'm going to go for a story here. Let's see here. Now, this is from the Washington Blade, written by Lucha Barro. Now, you may have heard that there has been floating around a little bit in the news the possibility that Enda might get a discharge petition in the House. It's been floated around. Pelosi hasn't really said anything, but there's been thoughts floated up. Well, that kind of sunk when our good buddy Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, a Republican, of course, said that she would not sign a discharge petition, which basically rang the death knell for Enda in the House, because if she wouldn't sign it, then none of her Republican colleagues would sign it either. Richard Tse, on the other hand, who is running for office in Massachusetts, I believe he is running. I don't know if he's running for Barney Frank's district, but he's running. And he apparently said he would sign it. Well, that's great. Of course, this guy is not in office yet, so it doesn't really do any good. It's interesting. Here, let me read a little bit of this. House race divides LGBT advocates. This is, again, from the Washington Blade, Chris Johnson. The controversial decision earlier this year by the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund to endorse gay Republican Richard Tse over pro-LGBT Representative John Tierney has prompted five openly gay or bisexual U.S. House members, all Democrats, naturally, to sign on as supporters of a fundraiser for Tierney. The fundraiser, scheduled for June 25th, is backed by at least 24 prominent Democrats and straight allies. Joe Salmanis. Well, yeah, there's an endorsement for you. God. Ugh. No. Well, it's that crowd. So they only care about the big money donors, the kind of people who think that, like, anti-transgender bigots like Joe Salmanis walk on water. So, you know. Well, don't forget, this is the state that has a so-called transgender rights law that has holes in it so big you can drive a fleet of transphobic trucks through it. So, you know, I mean, take it for what it's worth. Yeah, this is interesting. Apparently, there are this guy, John Tierney, there's a people who are signing on as co-chairs of this event. For John Tierney. For Tierney is Barney Frank is apparently involved with this. His former staffers, Joe Ricalto, who actually many years ago was actually on our show, and Maria Gesta, principals in the Washington political consulting firm Gesta Ricalto. Oh, so that's what happened to him. So they initiated the event to blunt the Victory Fund's endorsement of Tessay. So apparently there's a little fight going on. And what's interesting is what's the argument? Enda. Yeah. Well, you see, because this is the game these people play. They don't want to pass Enda. They don't give a shit whether LGBT working families live or die. They really don't. What they care about is exactly this. Dragging it out like a carrot on the stick to drive voters to the polls. That's what this is about. That's why in 2009, in the 111th Congress, when they had every opportunity, Barney Frank was there, everybody was there, they all had those opportunities. Remember, we were talking about this with Diego Sanchez last week. Okay, they had the opportunity, they had the votes, but, you know, that would have removed Enda as an opportunity to fundraise. I mean, now that the gay marriage money is starting to trickle because, you know, what can the Congress do for them? So they're not being able, they need to up that money flow. I mean, November is coming up. They need to another way to squeeze money out of you, out of your pocket. They need another issue in their hands to come to you once again, hat in hand, with nothing to show for it, and say, please give us money. Really, we're on your side. Really, we are. Forget about the last 5 years. Forget that we've been fucking you over for a generation, and just give us more money, please. Why? Because we're Democrats, and that's what we do. Please, we realize we've been fucking you over for a generation, but, you know, let's be honest. These people over here, the marriage folks, they gave us more money. So, you know, you have to understand that, well, when they give us more money, we have to fuck you over because, well, money. I mean, come on. You know, you shouldn't expect to be able to trust politicians. You should expect them to be focused on how much money they're raising. Unfortunately, people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are the exception, not the rule. Most of these people could not give a shit whether you live or die. What they care about is protecting their own jobs and their own party and their own agenda and making sure that they maintain their own self-image so they don't get caught having to support those evil transgender people, so that when they go down to K Street and want to make $1 million a year on the lobbyists, they're not sullied by our association, you must understand. Unless, of course, they're going real progressive, then we're an advantage. But, you know, if they're going for the normal K Street, well, you know, that could be a problem. Because, you know, it's those people. You know. Yeah. Could you pass me another Appletini, darling?
Yeah.
Yeah, though, that crowd, you know. Jeeves, another pitcher of Appletini's, please. Kiss, kiss. Yeah, those people. Because those are the people who fund these things. You know, the kind of people who want to hang out with Joe Salmanis. Understand that as we get closer to this election, I think what you're going to see is more lies, more rewriting of history, more pathetic begging on the part of Democrats. I think that's what you're going to see. You know, and I'll tell you, I would advise that before you lay down your votes this year, you think seriously. What has your legislator done for you? Is your legislator on the right side of your issues? And if not, what are you doing about it? Are you working for their opponent? Have you donated money? Have you written an op-ed? Written a letter to the editor? What are you doing to make sure that the good guys get in and the bad guys don't? What are you doing? Write an op-ed for your local paper. Talk to people. Attend a town meeting. Well, you're going to see a lot of those now. You're going to see these guys touring because I am Mr. or Mrs. Wonderful, and you should donate lots of money here. Have a bumper sticker. Okay? Yeah, that's what you're going to get. Don't forget, it's an election year. This is what you're going to get. And you know what you have to do? You are the voter. You say, well, gee, thanks for the bumper sticker. But what are you really going to do? Tell me. And don't let them dodge. If you don't get an answer to your question, ask it again. And keep answering. Keep asking. Why? Because it's only when we force the issue that we're going to get attention. It's just the way it is. When we were first starting, when the arguments about ENDA were starting in 2004 and 2007, one of the things that we realized very early on in that battle, and it's still, let's be honest, ongoing, but in those days, in 2004, and I broke the story about HRC and other people basically reportedly going around and pre-lobbying, and where we heard from congressional offices, from the office of one of a Connecticut congressman who said, an aide who said flat out, it would be great if HRC would get on board with this, okay? So in other words, HRC was running around at the time, 2004, telling everybody they were on board with trans inclusion, but in reality, they were running around behind our backs telling offices like Christopher Shays that they weren't. That they were making it clear that, oh, we're just saying that, we're not really doing it. Okay, you want to know why HRC is considered untrustworthy? It's shit like this. Okay, and so when I first broke that story, people were furious. And all of a sudden, it became an issue. Now, in 2004, we had a couple of protests at HRC headquarters in Washington. I was there for both of them. It did. I mean, yeah, we made the papers. but not a lot, because most of the LGBT media at the time was not LGBT. It was really gay and lesbian. They didn't give a fuck about us. The Washington Blades offices were blocks away from where we were holding our protest. They didn't even bother to send a reporter. Okay, now I should point out that Kevin Naff, who is the current editor-in-chief of the Washington Blade, was not in that position at that time. It was a guy whose name was Chris Crane. Used to write these notoriously transphobic op-eds, okay? That's what we were dealing with at the time. This guy who basically was advocating that, you know, well, we should dump these trannies and just move on and get gay-only rights, because these people, let them have their own movement. This is not our issue. That's what they were writing in gay media at that time, okay? So we got the Gay City News, New York's big gay newspaper, sent the reporter. Pacifica Radio was there, but not the Washington Blade, which their offices were like 3-4 blocks away from where we were holding our thing. I don't know 3-4 blocks, but it was the same neighborhood. So, but you see, what happened was, yeah, we were ignored pretty much that time. Then we came back 2007 when Barney Frank pulled his little bullshit trying to pass ENDA, non-inclusive ENDA, when he betrayed the community for nothing, for a bill that was never going to get past George Bush, even if it was able to pass. Even if somehow it was able to pass the Senate, and of course the Senate didn't even bother to take it up, okay? But even if that had managed by some miracle to happen, it would have been instantaneously vetoed by George Bush. He had said so. But for that, Barney Frank was willing to strip us out of the bill. Okay? These are the way the Democrats deal with you. If you don't have the money, if you're not wealthy, if you're not well-connected, if you're not going to pay for their $35,000 a plate dinners, then they don't want to talk to you because you don't have any money. They can't profit from their association with you. So if they can't get money and you don't represent enough votes, well, then they're just not going to deal with you at all. They're going to focus on rich people because that's where the money is. Just like they did in 2012 during the convention, where speaker after speaker after speaker after speaker after speaker was all about marriage. Not a single one spoke about our jobs except for one guy. Speaker John A. Perez of California was the only guy who talked about ENDA. And of course, when was he on? Prime time? No. 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. That's what it is. These guys want you to think that they are on your side. They are not. They are not. Nancy Pelosi is not your friend. Barack Obama is not your friend. Understand this. They do not care about you. They care about profit. They care about what's best for themselves and their party. That's what they care about. And if you can't make them any profit, if you don't represent enough votes, then you will get no attention. That's what it is. If that were not true, ENDA would have become law 5 years ago. It's the truth. ENDA would have been law 5 years ago if these people really gave a shit about the working class. But they don't. They don't give a fuck about the working class. They only care about rich people. They only care about the people who are at the Human Rights Campaign. They only care about the people who donate piles and piles of money. They only care about the people who, it's like, what it is it's, what have you done for me lately? And then they come to you. Here they come. Back again. They pull this bullshit every single year. And then they come back to you, as they will this year, hat in hand. Oh, we're fighting for you. Please give us money. Pledge your time. Knock on doors for us. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Organize. Help put us in office. Help us because we will help you. But then they don't help you. Because once they're safely in office, once they've got what they need, then it's, did we say ENDA? Oh, no. We really meant hate crimes. We really meant don't ask, don't tell. Were we talking about you? No, we weren't. We were talking about these people. Excuse me. Yes, keep that money flowing in. Yes, we were talking about you. With the big pile of money over there? Yes, you. That's who we were talking about. Yes, okay? Please. These people have been trying the same bullshit routine for 30 years. When are we going to stop allowing it? When? When are we going to stop putting up with this nonsense? I ask you, when do we finally say, you know what? No. I don't want Hillary Clinton. I want Elizabeth Warren. That's what I want. I don't want Hillary. I don't want Barack Obama Part 3. No, thank you. And I don't care how much she's in with the gays. And I don't care how popular she is. And I don't care that everybody thinks she's wonderful. She's a fucking yet another bullshit centrist. And this is exactly the kind of crap that needs to go. You want more bullshit like this with hemming and hawing, saying she supports things, and then when it's time to support them, just not doing them, like Barack Obama? That's really what you want? You really want another 8 years of that bullshit? It is time to dump the corporate centrists, like Hillary Clinton, like Barack Obama, like Bill Clinton, for that matter, okay? It is time to dump these people. It is time to dump Nancy Pelosi. It is time to dump these people, these corporate centrists with no spine, no, and certainly not progressive, and replace them with real progressives, with people who are willing to lead on the issues that matter in working families' lives. It is time for somebody like Elizabeth Warren, who considers the average and the poor first, the middle class, somebody like Bernie Sanders, who understands who's hurting, we don't need to give more protections to bigoted companies that discriminate, that we don't need to keep funding, not only not making laws, but funding their discrimination with taxpayer dollars. We need a president who understands that that is wrong. And that is not what we have today. We have a president who is perfectly fine with shoveling millions and millions of taxpayer dollars into companies that actively discriminate against LGBT working families right now, today. Just like we have a president who says he supports immigration rights and has deported more undocumented immigrants than any other president in United States history. This guy is a fucking liar. He talks a good game, but he folds in the clutch. And that's what he is. You want another 8 years of that? Vote for Hillary. You want something better? You want a real vision? You want somebody, I mean, I know she said she isn't running. But you know what? Barack Obama said about the same thing about this time in, what was it, 2010? Or not 2010, what am I saying? 2006? Okay, relatively the same amount of time. 2006? Barack Obama, nobody thought Barack Obama was running for president. I'll tell you what. I know. I remember what it was like when Howard Dean was running, because if you may know, I ran an organization, I co-chaired an organization with Angela Brightfeather. It was called Out for Dean Transgender. And what we saw when we worked with that organization was Howard Dean was able to fire the imagination, to make people travel cross country to knock on doors for this man. He was a real, first real progressive. I mean, the kind of guy who, when we went to him and we said, we need a statement on transgender inclusion in ENDA from Governor Dean or the campaign or something, you know. Within 2 days, we had a personal statement from Governor Dean on the issue, and a positive one. And basically what he said was, I don't know why this is an issue. This is a medical condition. It needs to be treated in an appropriate manner. That's it. This is not a moral issue. This is a medical issue. And deal with it like such. Okay? I mean, this guy was is a true progressive. And people responded. Okay? I think, and I believe this, I do believe this, that Elizabeth Warren could be the second coming of Howard Dean. And what that means is that you'll see people who, progressives, who have been so fed up with the way this country has been run for long, and they've just given up. And those people will get off their couches. Those people will stand up for an Elizabeth Warren candidacy. Those people will stand up for a Bernie Sanders candidacy. That's where I think this real sleeping giant is. If we can get Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders to run for president, I think all of a sudden, don't forget, everybody thought Hillary was the heir apparent at this point in 2006. Everybody thought, oh, she's got the nomination sewn up. And then all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, Barack Obama, whoa, hey, what happened? Don't think it can't happen again. And if anybody can pull that off, it's Elizabeth Warren. I mean, I love Bernie Sanders from a policy standpoint, but he's an acquired taste as far as being an orator. You know, I mean, he's a nice guy. He's a good guy. But he sounds like he's arguing with you half the time. Elizabeth Warren has this way of explaining stuff. You know how they call Bill Clinton the Secretary of Explaining Stuff? Well, she's like that too. She can explain stuff in a way and make it easy for the American public to latch onto. In a way that not many people can. Barack Obama has that talent as well. But not as well. I think Elizabeth Warren would be an amazing president. Now, I would encourage you. I am reading her book right now, her new book. I would encourage you to read it. I'm about a third of the way through it now. I'm really enjoying it. So I would encourage you. I forget what the name of it is. Let me see. My browser is closing. You know, I'm having all kinds of problems with my browser. I don't know why. It's very funny. I don't know. All of a sudden, my browser is, it's not crashing, but it's like, I don't know, like as if I had some sort of a problem. With something, some factor crashing, you know, like some kind of app or something. I don't know. It's very weird. I don't know whether Blog Talk Radio is making it do that or something like that. Now, I don't know. Did you hear about this? This was kind of bizarre. Last month, apparently, now this comes to us from Right Wing Watch. The title of this is HGTV. Now, HG stands for generally home and garden, but HGTV picks an anti-gay, anti-choice extremist for a new reality TV show. They announced at one point that they were going to announce a new reality show They would. It was described as these twin brothers, David and Jason Benham, will leverage their good-natured sibling rivalry to help families find a fixer-upper and transform it into the dream home they never thought they could afford. Well, what they didn't tell people was that one of these brothers is not just a real estate dealer, but also a dedicated right-wing activist in the model of his father, Flip Benham, who has headed the abortion clinic protest group Operation Save America ever since it split from the militant anti-choice group Operation Rescue. Apparently, Benham has, as leader of this, condemned the Interfaith Sandy Hook Memorial, protested in front of mosques while shouting "Jesus hates Muslims," blamed the Aurora shooting on the Democratic Party, which he said promotes a culture of death. He has also protested LGBT pride events, interrupted church services during a sermon by, quote, sodomite Episcopalian Bishop Gene Robinson, and was found guilty of stalking a Charlotte abortion doctor after passing out hundreds of wanted posters with the physician's name and photo on it. He even blamed September 11th on abortion rights. Now, it should be told that this, I mean, this is unbelievable, you know, that they chose these people to apparently host a TV show. But I will say that what's interesting is this very quickly, they said they're not going to do this. I'm looking for the oh, here it is. Okay. Apparently, according to there is actually a a Facebook post that indicates apparently that they are not going to be moving forward with this because now that they discovered this, I mean, they were going to put these guys on television. You know, I mean, it's like, don't you have enough bigots on television? I mean, isn't that duck dickhead thing still on? Don't you have enough of these people on television? I mean, you know, you have Fox News, so, I mean, don't you get enough of that stuff? I don't know. Anyway, by the way, I know Fiona mentioned it earlier, but yes, it is, in fact, my birthday. I am 52 years old today. So I guess I'm feeling a little bit of a sense of my own mortality. A little bit, anyway. Then you reach a certain age, you get to the point where, you start thinking about stuff, you know, and you start to realize that you're not going to live forever. Not really. You're just not. And you start to, you know, and of course, as I think I've mentioned, some of you may know, my dad passed late last year. And so, you kind of start to have those kind of thoughts when it's like, you know, somebody once said to me, it's like, you know, you really have to grow up for once and for all when both of your parents are no longer with you. When your parents are no longer here, then you're officially a grown up, is what they say. But, you know, it's kind of true. I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, there are always things that even as you go through life and you get older and you have family and things, there's always stuff you depend on your parents for. They're like that last backstop. You know, that final, if everything else goes wrong, they're always there. And then one day, they're not. So, I don't know. But in any case, so I guess, you know, having a birthday and having a show on the same day is just kind of cool. You know, and I'm really, my gift is, at least from you guys, is that you guys are tuning in. You guys are listening. The audience of this show has swelled a lot over the last several weeks. I am so excited. And, well, you know, I got a job now, at least the beginnings of a job, and, you know, so, and, well, I'm back on hormones, back on track. So that's kind of my birthday gift to myself, and I'm very excited. And, well, you know, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I'm starting to, my voice is starting to go, and I think I'm going to end the show a little bit early, because I can you hear what's going on here? I unfortunately, I haven't built those muscles up yet, and I think I'm going to end the show a little bit early, because I don't want to blow out my vocal cords, thank you very much. So I will say goodnight now. I hope you will tune in next week. We will be doing another show. Who knows, as far as I might go do something in the middle of the week. Don't expect what you saw this week, but I may pop on, and who knows. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thank you for sticking around. Thank you, as always, for supporting this media and this show, and I love you for it. And we will catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.